con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un McChicken es solo $1.50. Resulta que ser el héroe de tu primita solo te cuesta $1.50. Por un McChicken, good deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
So welcome to the Games Gone podcast. Thanks so much for all your comments over the last weeks, the last few. Trevor Francis was particularly successful. Thanks for all your lovely comments. But leave a review. We love your reviews, be they good or bad. We want to hear what you think. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by former Birmingham City defender, but also Republic of Ireland, also Blackburn, also Southampton, and Kidderminster Harriers. It's Jeff Kenner. Jeff, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Hiya, Tom. Delighted to be here.
Well, let's start back in Dublin, young lad. When did you first think football's where I wanted to be, you know?
Well, sort of my earliest memory was when I was maybe 5 or 6 years of age and just being out in the back garden and kicking the ball against the wall and just like any kid at the time, you know, you wanted to join the local estate team and it was just, that was my earliest memory. And from then, it grew and became a passion. I got involved with Southampton, funnily enough, when I was 12.
Wow.
How
did that happen?
Lucky. Yeah, I was sort of the big thing at the time. I mean, I'm going back a long time now in Ireland, was the schoolboy clubs love to get over to England to play against the English teams, you know. So that was a sort of an end of season thing where, I don't know, maybe the parents got away as well for a few drinks and it was all a big do. So we ended up going, Southampton used to
what
run it.
What team was that you were with?
I was with Palmerstown Rangers, which was my local estate team. And Southampton ran a competition called the Setonia Cup, which was a really successful big competition. And teams from Europe would come. We even had teams from America come into it. So it was very prestigious. And obviously Southampton put their kids in at all the different age groups. So we played against the under 12s at the time. And I had a particularly good game. They asked me to stay on for an extra week after the competition had finished. And I trained then with all their schoolboys from sort of 12 up to 15. And it just went from there. I got asked to come back over then in school holidays. In the summer, I'd come over and I'd stay for, about a month really, you know, be in digs for a month and train with the lads. And then I moved over when I was 16.
So, I mean, big thing to move out of Ireland. We'll talk about that in a moment. But when you were there as a young lad, and who was your inspiration that gave you the you know, to go on?
My dad was a good snooker player, but his passion was football. He just loved his football. He was a big Leeds fan.
Obviously Johnny Giles and co.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So I think he was obviously a huge influence on me, but there was a chap called Martin Murray who was he was a young lad at the time, but he was a qualified coach. He wasn't just a parent that would go, right, come on, that's great, well done. He actually would put on sessions and do a bit of coaching, you know. So everybody loved playing for him, and he was a big influence on me at sort of between 12 and 16 until I left. So I owe him a lot, but certainly my dad was, I mean, anytime there was football on the telly, which wasn't very often back then, we'd sit down and we'd watch it, and if I needed it, he'd come out and kick the ball with me to help me along, you know. He was just full on with it.
When you were you always, even as a kid, were you a defender?
No, I was actually an attacking midfielder. Everybody wanted to play up front or midfield and score goals. So I played in midfield. And the club, Southampton, actually signed me as a midfielder. But I ended up filling in for, I can't remember who, at left-back, funnily enough. And it just stuck. So I ended up then, that's all of a sudden I was a defender. And, I mean, I didn't mind. I was in the team every week, so I was happy to do it.
Who signed you at Southampton then?
So it was Chris Nicol was my first gaffer. I'm trying to think what year it was now. It was 87 I went over. And he was the manager. So, and he gave me my debut 2 years later. So very grateful to him for that.
He's a great lad, by the way. I know
he's
him very well, Chris.
Man.
Suffering
lovely
at the moment.
He's
pretty ill
yes.
at the moment. Yeah. And I know we're involved very soon in doing something for him, the former Blues team. We're going to play a match for him out in Warsaw.
Fantastic,
so,
yeah.
He's a great man.
Absolutely wonderful man, yeah. Really, really nice fella. As a 16-year-old lad, though, oh my God, he scared the pants off you.
Yeah.
You know, he was a big man and he had that look about you. And if
he had that about him, no, he could.
Yeah.
When he was a manager, I used to interview him and I'd say, so-and-so, and he'd say, what, you're picking my team now, are you? He'd do all that, you know, he'd scare
but
you.
The thing was, sometimes he didn't even have to speak. He just had that look that he'd look at you and you'd go, okay, Gaffer, right, I'll leave that with you and I'm off. You know, he was there. But yeah, he was a lovely man. And he gave me my debut.
Who was that against?
That was Wimbledon at home at the old Dell. Yeah. That was, yeah, the crazy gang era. I played right back that day. And I played against a lad called, I think his first name is Phil, but definitely Anthrobus.
Yeah,
left winger. And he had a metal plate in his arm. And of course, Wimbledon were the original long ball team. So all day I was getting smashed about by this fella. They were just hanging it up above me and he'd come running at me. And whether he headed it or not, it didn't matter. He'd just run into me sort of thing. But that was my debut. So
you learn quick though.
Oh yeah, well you have to, don't you? It's sink or swim. There's no you can't sort of I'll be okay next one. You gotta grab the bull by the horns and go with it.
How old were you then when you made your debut?
I was 19 when I made my debut, and it was sort of the last two games of the season really. It was one of them, you know, where we couldn't achieve anything. We weren't going to get relegated. So
he's throwing you in.
He's throwing me in just to have a taste and see how I like it.
When you know, the following... But when I talk to most players, once they've had a taste of the first team, it's hard to go back to the sniffs.
Absolutely. And that happened to me. Unfortunately, Chris left the club that summer and Ian Bramfoot took over. And I was out in the cold. I went from having that taste at the back end of the season to not playing then till probably the January of the following season. So
did that affect your confidence?
It did, actually, yeah. Because I actually got to the stage where... And it's like you say, because you've had the taste of it, reserve football, it just doesn't compare at all. So I got to the stage where I was thinking... Maybe I need to go out on loan. I need to do something because at the moment now I'm drowning in the reserves here, you know. So, and I don't know if you would say it was luck or it was unlucky, but Jason Dodd was playing and he got injured, which meant I came out of the cold back into the team. And I stayed in the team then for the remainder of the season, I think 20 odd games. And that was sort of it then. I had taken my chance, and the next season then I was first team squad and off we went.
Was he the only other manager you had at Southampton?
No, after Ian Bramford we had Alan Ball.
Oh yeah.
And he was just amazing, absolutely amazing.
I knew Alan well, proper bloke.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, loved him to bits. Not the whole tactical genius that people expect from managers nowadays, but very good, very motivational, knew how to get the best out of players. Everybody loved him, respected him. And while I was there, while he was the manager, our tactics were very simple. You know, it was, we got the ball to Matt Letizier. He did what he wanted with it. If he lost it, our game plan was to get it back as quick as possible and give it straight back to him. And it didn't matter who we played, home or away. That was it. So, and it worked out pretty well most of the time.
I suppose when you're playing for a World Cup winner as well, not only a World Cup winner, but a great player.
Phenomenal player.
Maybe the best player at the club.
Yeah. I mean, he was, I think he was in his maybe 50s, early 50s when he had the job then. So he still liked to do a little bit, but he couldn't really run about. But yeah, you could see his touch and his awareness. He was just, you could see he'd been a top player.
One of the first players in the country to wear white boots when he was a player. And we used to say, there was a saying then in football, if you wear white boots, you've got to be a good player.
Absolutely. Back then, oh my God, yeah. I mean, they wear all pink and everything is in vogue now. And maybe not even good players are wearing them. So yeah, you had to have a bit about you back then to be coming up with a nice bright pair of boots and be able to handle the bit of stick that you might have got.
114 league games for the Saints. I mean, that's a good run for any club. Yeah. Why did you leave then?
Well, Blackburn Rovers came knocking, so it wasn't really a difficult decision, you know. We were sort of mid-table, was a good season for us. A difficult season for us was avoiding relegation, going to the last couple of games of the season, needing to get points to stay up. And we had a few of them. So when Blackburn came knocking, it wasn't really a difficult decision. I was sort of thinking, well, Blackburn are top of the league here. That Jack Walker had bought the club, was investing heavily in the club. I mean, gosh, nearly half of the England team were playing for Blackburn, a small town in Lancashire. And obviously you're thinking, well, the Champions League had come about, and if we win the league and all that sort. So it wasn't really a terribly difficult decision to make.
I think they paid £1.5 million for the year then, which is a lot of dough in them days.
Well, back then it was. I mean, Shearer had only gone... listen to me. Shearer had signed for 3.3, and that was a world... I think it was a world record at the time. And that was only, I think, 2 or 3 years later. And that was sort of the start then of transfer fees. So, yeah, at the time, for a defender, it was a decent chunk of change.
Just before we get on to Alan Shearer and Blackburn and winning the league, just you mentioned a name there before. Tell us how good Matt Letizia was.
Phenomenal. He's just one of these players that it just came easy to him. He didn't have to practice. He did. He loved free kicks, long range shooting, but the man was just a magician. The ball would just stick to his feet, and he would... It's not even that he would do a step over. He would do things just off the cuff that, I mean, you could probably today he'd be analysed to death as the opposition. But even then, you couldn't read him. You know, I remember when the analysis came in, and I'd sort of look at Giggs or Overmars and these type of players, you think, right, well, he does a bit of that, but then he does a bit of that, and then he does a bit of that as well. And you sort of go, well, you can't really think, once I get him into this position, I know what he's going to do, because they were that talented and unique that they came up with something else to get them out of the situation they were in. And Matt was like that, where he was just a natural born footballer, you know, and loved football. He won't thank me for saying it. Wasn't the best athlete. All diets and all that sort of stuff. He wasn't really too interested in that. He sort of towed the line a little bit, but he did like Coca-Cola and chips and
burgers,
yeah. But you know what?
Phenomenal.
He'd go out on the Saturday and he'd win you the game.
Isn't that the key? As long as you do it on Saturday.
Well, this is it. And he can be the fittest player in the world and have the best physique, and you can run for 20 kilometres in 90 minutes. But if you don't really affect the game, none of that matters. You know,
a few of them around.
And that's, yeah. And I think that would be my big thing about analysis, you know, is that it's all very well that, right, okay, we need the individual players to be doing 12 to 15 kilometres because statistics show if 8 out of 10 of the outfield players are doing that, you're going to win the game. But I don't think Matt Letizia ever did double figures kilometres in a game. But he, out of nowhere, he would turn, hit a shot from 40 yards, and it go in the top corner, and you'd win 1-0, or you'd draw 1-1, or whatever, you know, and you'd get something from it. And I had absolutely no problem whatsoever doing extra work for him, because I knew I couldn't do what he could do.
And he could win you the game.
And he'd win us the game.
And a win bonus, probably.
Absolutely, yeah. Without a doubt, yeah. So, I mean, it's... I think the game today now, it's so analytical that it's gone a little bit away from just these sort of natural-born footballers who people will come in and pay money just to watch them, regardless of whether they run 12 or 2 kilometres.
Doesn't matter. So you moved on to Blackburn Rovers. You know, you're still a young man. Were you ever homesick?
I was homesick when I was young, when I first came over, because, like I said, I left as I was 16, And once the sort of the high of being involved with a professional club, and you see the first team lads coming in every day, and you're doing the kit and you're cleaning boots and you have to have all the balls pumped and all of that sort of stuff, when the excitement of that wears off and you get into sort of October, November, and the weather turns, and it's then the job is the job, you know, you're learning to become a professional player, and I don't know, the balls don't get pumped up one morning and the U team manager goes ballistic and you don't do any training, you're just doing laps of the pitch and all that sort of stuff, you know, it becomes the reality of, well, this is now a job and I need to knuckle down here. And then I had a little sort of, I miss my man Dan, I miss my mates back in Dublin, and I got to sort of a position where I was on the phone all the time, and it wasn't doing me any good because I was sort of always thinking, oh, I'll get on the phone later and I can speak to my man or I'll speak to my mate or whatever. And my dad actually came on to me and said, look, he said, this isn't working. He said, I'll tell you what you do, you can ring your ma. I mean, obviously he spoke to my dad as well, but you can ring your mum on Friday night and you can stay on the phone for as long as you want, but it's only once a week.
Got you.
And in fairness to him, at the time I thought, oh, you, well, can't, yeah, swear, but I was like, well, you know, I'm feeling a bit homesick. And he said, I'm telling you, this is what you need to do, and do this and it'll all
good
be
advice.
Great. And it was great advice, best advice ever, yeah, brilliant. And within probably, I don't know, a month, 6 weeks, that had all
gone
and everything was grand again, eh?
We were in great company. George Best was the same. Chris Brunt at West Brom was the same. All came over, all had that feeling.
I can't believe you put me in the same name as George Best, but yeah, I'll take it.
So you're at Blackburn, and all of a sudden, you know, from somebody who's broke into a team from the youth team, you're actually paid a lot of money for you, and you're with big stars again.
Yeah. I mean, I was very lucky because Shearer, I sort of grew up with Shearer through the Southampton system. And I mean, I remember thinking he was a fully grown man at 14 years of age, you know, he had that build, and he would just bulldoze our centre-halves, you know, big players, young players couldn't handle him at all. And then obviously he went into the first team and scored a hat-trick against Arsenal on his debut, and it all obviously went from there. But yeah, he obviously went to Blackburn, Tim Flowers went to Blackburn, so when I signed, it made it not as formidable to go into the dressing room.
You knew some.
Because I knew somebody that I could always sort of just hang on their short tails a little bit till I got to know everybody else. But it's like I say, you know, there was, gosh, I think you think of the England team in 96, there was probably, you had Shearer, Sutton, Batty, Lasso, Tim Flowers was in the squad. I think, I can't remember, I think Stuart Ripley might have been on the periphery of it. So, you know, there was certainly three or four of the England players in the starting 11 were playing at Blackburn Rovers.
I remember the team that won the league, and it always struck to me, I never thought, oh, great individuals. I always thought, what a team they were.
Yeah, that was a big thing, I think, which Kenny and Ray Harford, God rest his soul.
Bless him.
Instilled, you know, it was, it was just good. I say good, they were better than good. They were really talented players working as hard as they could for the team.
For each other.
And I think that was probably the key to that team, was that, I mean, Shearer could run all day, Wilcox could run all day, Ripley could run all day. You had Batty and Sherwood in midfield that could hit passes out of nowhere, where hard as nails could run all day. Lasso was up and down the wing, I was up and down the wing, you know, so Colin Hendry, Henning Berg at centre, you know, it was just a rock solid team. Mm-hmm. And we all worked extremely hard for each other and got the success from it.
And I mean, your manager, I mean, Kenny Dalglish, one of the greatest strikers of all time.
Yeah, phenomenal. And I mean, I go back to you were saying there about Alan Ball being the best player at the club. Kenny was, I think he was early 40s then, and we used to have a five-a-side on a Friday night, Friday training before the game on a Saturday, and he would join in, and oh my God, he was the best player at the club then. Talk about a natural born goal scorer. He was just phenomenal, and I was forever, every Friday I thought, I want to be on the gaffer's side, because you don't want him to be making a muggy before a game on a Saturday.
It's interesting. I mean, he was part of the, with Lou McCary and David, he was part of the Celtic Quality Street gang in their youth team, which were renowned. I mean, the man was, he's one of the best for me.
Well, you just look at his status at Liverpool, you know. Yeah. They've named the stand after him. He's just held in such high regard. And rightly so, you know. He was just one of those, again, another natural-born footballer that could do things without thinking, and it just made it all look so easy.
You mentioned a guy there that I got to know very well, and he was my Friday night go-to-the-dogs man, Ray Harford. What a gentleman. Ray,
wonderful man, absolutely wonderful man. Fabulous coach, really good coach. But yeah, he loved the little gamble. He was always talking about the dogs or the horses.
We went every Friday to Hall Green.
Yeah, he was really nice, and he was great with the lads. And I think that's a big important thing for any successful team, is that the number two has to have that rapport where the lads are confident enough that they can moan or whatever it is with the number two, knowing that it won't just go straight back to the gaffer, you know. There's a time and a place where you might speak to the captain and the captain will go and speak to the gaffer, but you have that
the odd whinge
and
that.
That's been happening as far back as I can remember, and I'm sure it happened a long time before I even got involved.
Is it fair to say, or am I wrong when I say he was probably a coach, Ray Harford, that was well ahead of his time?
Oh, without a doubt, yeah. I mean, I remember doing sessions when I first went there, and I was just amazed, you know. I've never experienced sessions like it before, and the intensity of the sessions. I mean, we worked hard at Southampton because we had to, you know. We were good players, but we weren't top of the league players and winning leagues and playing internationally. So that was the big thing that struck me the first, maybe, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks when I was there, was the sessions were so intense.
Yeah.
And the quality was so good that if you weren't at it and on it, you were left behind, and you looked pedestrian, you know. Yeah. And you certainly didn't want that to happen.
I remember him sitting with me at the Greyhounds, and we were chatting, and he said to me, he said, and this is well before anybody invented the word false number nine, but I remember him saying to me, do you know, he said, I keep thinking one day I'm going to play without any forwards.
Right.
Without any forwards.
Yeah.
He said, let's see what the centre-halves do.
Yeah.
And now we got false number nines and all sorts. Yeah. The man was ahead.
Pep Guardiola is now the sort of the god, if you like, of management, and he does that, and Ray was obviously talking about it.
Yeah. Which 20 years ago. 20 years ago.
Yeah. So, yeah, I wouldn't argue with you there. He was definitely, he was a football man, and he was constantly thinking of ways to improve the team or improve the sessions, and he was great.
What about, you know, winning the top division? I mean that must have been, I mean, it's got to be the highlight.
Yeah, absolutely. For me particularly, you know, I came in at the back end of that season. Jason Wilcox, I think it was his cruciate, and I got a serious injury. So I came in. They signed me, they put Graham Massot up to left side of midfield, I went in at left back, and I played the last 9 games of the season. So for me, obviously number one, I was buzzing to be there, and then to go on and win the league. It was just, it's what schoolboys think about, Tom. Sure. You know, when you're growing up as a kid and you want to be a
professional
Think
about who's won the Premier
footballer.
League, think about who's won it. They stand out as one of the teams that have won the Premier League, apart from the so-called big guys.
Yes, I think that's the thing, is that obviously, until Leicester have done it recently, no other team out of either London or Manchester, you know, Liverpool, where that was it, you know. There was sort of, it was a closed sort of group of teams that could win it. And Jack came along, and gosh, I remember thinking at the time, God, this man is worth £400 million. That is just obscene money. Oh my God. But he was happy. He was a local man. He's actually done very well with Walker Steel, and wanted to make the club as successful as he could. And boy, did he do that. You know, the training facilities were amazing. And again, I was fortunate in the time where I can remember the lad saying, until the training ground had been done, there was the the odd time that they used to go and train at the local park, you know, and they'd be moving stuff off the pitch, dog stuff off the pitch before they trained. But the facilities when I went there were state of the art, you know, and the pitches were immaculate, and Jack was a man of his word, and he put his money where his mouth was.
Big wrench to leave them?
Yeah, I loved my time there. I mean, it's I've been very fortunate where I haven't moved around a lot as a player. You know, I had from joining Southampton as a YTS at 16, I had sort of 8 years there. About 7 years at Blackburn, 2 years at Birmingham, 2 years at Derby, and 2 years at Kidderminster. So it's not like I've been around loads and loads of clubs. So yeah, my wife is from Blackburn. Kids were born there. So it was, I won't say it was difficult to leave. It was a bit of a gut wrench because I loved the club. But Graeme Souness came in, and I'd had two Achilles operations on my left Achilles. So he brought in John Curtis from Man United, and I didn't sort of get a look in that season. And that happens, you know, you take that on the chin. That's part of the business. Obviously, you don't like it when it happens, but it does. And then that led me then to Birmingham City. So,
on loan at first, wasn't it?
Yeah, I went out on loan for Steve. Steve rang me, and it's funny. I was looking at holidays, because I wasn't in the squad at all, and I'd spoke to Graham, and he said, look, if you want to do something, he said, yeah, you've no problem, but you're not going to be involved. So we were actually looking at sort of booking something to go away over the Christmas, and this was the first time to have a Christmas where you go, do you know what, we'll have a week away somewhere. So my wife Jackie was buzzing with that. So then I got a phone call from Steve, and that all sort of went out the window. I came down, I'd signed for the month initially. And I think I came down around the 21st of December, something like that, sort of the week before Christmas. And then I obviously had a decent month and signed then for 2 years in January.
Yes, and you still live in the Midlands, so yeah, you must have enjoyed it. But what was your time like at Birmingham then?
Oh, it was phenomenal, Tom. Oh, my God. I mean, again, it was such a good, honest, hard-working team where we didn't have superstars, you know. Probably Stan was probably Stan Lazaridis was probably the
only good receiver,
international sort of standout international at the club at the time when I signed, and he was phenomenal. Yeah, great left winger, really, and a lovely bloke as well. But that was a big thing. The first thing I did notice, though, was the training facilities. West Hills was nothing like it is now, let me tell you. I remember cold showers, and the dressing rooms were freezing. There was no canteen. And I'd gone from having that for the previous sort of 10, 15 years of my career to having none of it. But we made changes along the way, you know, and Steve was great for that, because obviously he would have had that at Man United. So he was all about getting the players, improving things and whatnot, yeah.
Who was in your team with you then?
So we had Benno and Ian Bennett and Nico Vassin, but predominantly Benno in goal.
He was mad, wasn't he? Let's be fair.
Yeah, he was just daft as a brush. And I think that's a goalkeeper thing, isn't it? Because you got to be mad to be going in and want to dive around.
But
and
a good keeper,
yeah, very good keeper, yeah. Definitely, yeah. So you had myself and Nicky Eden looking for the fullback spot.
Funny ears as well, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, really nice fella. Martin Granger over at left back, with Darren Pourse, Michael Johnson, centre halves. Who else did we have? In midfield, we had Brian Hughes.
Good player, yeah.
Olivier Tebbeley. Yeah, loved him. In front of me, Paul Devlin on the left stand. Up front, then you'd Horst, Stern John, Tommy Mooney was there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to sort of think now who else was there. Darren Carter was on the periphery of things then. He was obviously just a really young lad, but we know what happened with him. And that would be the names that sort of stick out.
What stands out for you at your time at Birmingham, games-wise?
Well, games-wise, was obviously getting promoted.
Yeah.
You know, because to go to the club, sort of sign for the club in January, and then get promoted through the playoffs, to go from mid-table, the run we had was phenomenal. And then to get promoted as we did, It was just fabulous, you know, and the lads were buzzing. Obviously, Steve was buzzing, and you could feel the fans. Yeah. It was almost like a weight had been lifted off their shoulders, you know, and it was like, here we are, we're in the hallowed ground, you know, of the Premier League.
Do you recall that atmosphere at the Millennium?
The biggest thing I remember about the Millennium was Darren Carter scoring the penalty, and just that sprint after the friggin' 2 hours of playing where you're dead on your feet, to be able to run that 50 yards to get hold of them and express that emotion, that would be the biggest sort of feeling.
Were you surprised that he took the penalty?
I wasn't on the day, because he was just, obviously he'd got into the squad with us, and Steve, rightly so, we were practicing penalties, and he was just the coolest penalty taker. There was him and Brian Hughes, Devs, and you just thought,
they're going to score.
Yeah, I really remember.
You never looked at it and thought, oh my god, Darren Carter's 17 taking the penalty.
I didn't know.
Because there's one thing training taking them, but in a game,
absolutely, yeah, and a game of such magnitude as well, and obviously what,
100 million pound penalty,
80,000 people, and that, yeah, so for such a young man and such a talented player to take that on his shoulders and to go and just like it's like he's in the training ground and, you know, we're having a laugh. It was just phenomenal for him. Absolutely phenomenal.
The whole day was, and you know, I mean, I've no bones about it. I lost it in the commentary and looking at all the Blues fans. I'd got fans, I'd got pop stars, I'd got fans from abroad ringing the phone in after everybody. Yeah. I mean, the joy it brought.
Well, that was the big thing that I remember, yeah. It was like all of a sudden we went from just being Birmingham City players within the city to being Birmingham City players who had got promoted and were now Premier League. So for the blue half of the city, it was such a big, huge, massive thing, and they'd waited so long for it as well. So rightly so, that whole season, they enjoyed it.
The first in the Premier League, I mean, I know Steve changed a few things around, didn't he, in the Premier League? I mean, I can't even remember exactly. Did you figure in that early games?
Yeah, I was. I was a skipper, so I think I might have missed one game that season.
So you played in the derby games?
Oh yeah, gosh yeah. they were electric. You know, that was just. I think Villa have obviously been lording it over the Villa fans over the Blues fans for so long, and then to beat them twice in the way that we did, you know, we didn't just beat them, we really sort of handled them.
Were you surprised at Enkelman?
I mean, I feel sorry for that guy.
Because he went to Blackburn after.
Yeah, he was a good goalkeeper, but that's one of those things that people go, oh yeah, I remember you, and they won't go, I remember you making this great save. They'll go, oh, you were the one that let the ball run under your foot, and yeah. So I do feel sorry for him.
Steve often talks, when I speak to Steve, about he didn't need to do a lot in the dressing room because of what Villa had been saying, one or two of their players had been saying in the papers about who are Birmingham, we don't know who they are.
I want to say the centre-half was Melberg.
The right back Melberg.
Right back, was it? Yeah. And I remember we went to do, before the game, we went into the town hall in the city, and it was a press thing, and I'm sure you were there. And I remember him saying stuff like, well, I've never heard of any of their players, and you know, I think he's Swedish international, and we're this, and we're Premier League, and it was just, I thought, oh, you're going to regret that. And he did a huge, big article along those lines.
That's right, in the Birmingham Mail.
And like you say, the gaffer then just, oh, has everybody seen this? and that was it then, you know, it was just.
Horst was saying in the tunnel, it also was saying, like, you lads were growling, trying to scare the life out of them.
We were really after it, because we knew how important it was. And I'm sure the Villa players probably just underestimated us at the time, you know.
Let's be fair, they were a decent side, Villa, then.
Absolutely, yeah. They had a lot of good international players playing for them. And I think they just didn't expect us probably to be as hungry for it, if that's the right expression.
That's exactly the way.
You know, and But I can remember being stood in the tunnel and the music's going and the fans are rocking the house, absolutely rocking the house. And I'm thinking, I just can't wait to get out there.
Really?
You know? Yeah, I just can't wait to get out there because you could feel the electricity within the ground. And to go on and beat them then 3-0 just on our own patch, when it's been such a long time for it to happen.
25 years, I think, since the last time they've been in the top flight.
Yeah, so it was just great.
Absolutely. But then great. To go to their ground.
Yeah, go to their ground. It was still a good atmosphere, but it wasn't as electric as, I think, what sort of, not the players, I think the fans, it was more of a, just to be there to say we were at Villa Park, yeah, when Blues played, yeah, at Villa Park, because it was so long. But again, you know, I felt we were just a bit more hungry for it than they were on the night. And obviously it helped when they went down to 10 men. But you know, that's part of the parcel of the game.
Robbie Savage, of course, who, whatever you think about him, I suppose on the pitch he's an incentive to people, isn't he?
Oh my God, well, for us he was great because Robbie had that huge infectious way about him of getting people, because he worked his socks off from minute one to minute 90, whatever it was. And you know, you see somebody doing that, if you're possibly not having a great game when you're on the ball, it inspires you to work hard, you know, yeah, do as much as you can. And he was great for that. And he was great for, I think, for that time at the club, he was exactly what the club needed, somebody like that.
You were part of that got the team into the Premier League for the first time. And then, not, you know, then all of a sudden you're on the move again. I mean, for us mere mortals outside, how difficult is that when you've been part of something special and then all of a sudden it's, well, thanks very much?
Yeah. Again, I was disappointed. I certainly thought I could have stayed for another season, you know, but again, that's, obviously managers get paid to make those decisions. Players always feel that they're making the right decision. And you
was
know,
it Mario Melchiot he brought in, didn't he, Melchiot?
No.
He came just, in right back.
Yeah, I can pick Ferdinand Coley.
Ferdinand Coley.
Ferdinand Coley, yeah. So,
yeah, okay.
Enough said. So, yeah, I was a little bit disappointed. But then I went to Derby.
Big club again.
You know, a huge club, yeah. George Brawley was the manager. We avoided, I sort of went in the March, just before the end of the transfer window. They were sort of in the relegation zone. We managed to stay up. And then the following season, we made the playoffs. So, you know, I'd gone from not playing at Birmingham to going back off to Derby then and captain, and the next season then we made the playoffs. And at that time, Tom, you know, I was 34 years of age. So it's, as much as players like, oh, I'm as fit as I can and as fit as I am.
Your body, it takes its toll on your body.
It does, yeah. And, you know, I think I played over 500 games in my career. So that's a good innings, you know.
Sure.
It was just one of those things. I think Steve wanted to bring in somebody younger and arguably maybe a little bit fitter. I would definitely dispute that he wasn't better quality wise. But that's a manager's decision.
Managers do, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And
you're a young Irish lad. What was it like for you and your family when you got that call to the Republic's first team?
Well, obviously, as any young player from whatever country to get a call to the national team is a huge, huge thing, you know. And I was just blown away with it, you know. I'd got involved.
Who called you up first time?
Jack Charlton.
Jack.
Yeah.
It was a big time for the Republic then with Jack in charge, wasn't it?
I mean, at that time, our squad, we were, the quality in our squad was, it was Liverpool players, Manchester United players, Chelsea players, Tottenham players, you know, it was all the so-called big clubs, yeah, from either the north or London in the south. And I was 24 years of age, and I was just, you know, you're like fanboying, you know, like what, there was Andy Townsend, Ronnie Whelan,
Ray Houghton,
Steve Staunton, Paul McGrath, Mick McCarthy, Dennis Irwin. You know, it was just just being around those players was just
how good was Paul McGrath?
Oh, he was always the best player on the pitch. Always. Even when he wasn't playing well, he was the best player on the pitch. He just had a way of being in the right place at the right time. And again, another player that just made it look easy.
Football brain.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Didn't need coaching.
I talked to Ray Houghton at length about playing for Jack Charlton. He said it was just... I don't know what it was. I mean, you had good players, but he got you believing and understanding you were a good player.
Well, I think the big thing with Jack was that he was definitely his own man. And he had his own idea and philosophy of how we, as a group of Irish players, would progress to a finals. And he wouldn't veer from that. You know, he was the boss, and he said, right, this is the team, this is how we're doing it. And you knew if you didn't do it the way he wanted to do it, you'd get a bollocking, and you'd have to do it. And if you didn't do it, you were off, or you were out of the squad. You know, it was, he was very, very, this is how it is, it's my way, or you're not involved.
Did you get to meet the Pope, by the way?
No, I wasn't in.
You were after that?
I was after that. But the thing was that at that time, because the Jack had galvanised the country, if you like.
Englishman to do that takes some doing.
Absolutely. Oh, my God, yeah. And there was a lot of resistance to him getting the job from within the FAI, you know, so...
perhaps Roy Keane to start with. Yeah. Didn't like anybody, Roy, did he? But, he wasn't Irish.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it was just... I was just happy to be in the squad, you know. It was one of when you go in the squad, you think, right, well, I want to be in the team. But it was such a great time for Irish football, and to be, again, I go back to atmospheres at grounds, playing at Lansdowne Road, even although it be a rugby ground, the atmosphere was always electric, you know, no matter who you played. And it was just a great time to be involved with the team.
Just, I mean, we talked about you, but... Your dad loved his football. How proud was he and the rest of your family?
Yeah, to see his, I'm the eldest of six, five boys, and my sister came along as the last one. So I'm sure he's proud of all his children, but obviously his passion was football. So I'm sure to see his eldest son go on and have a successful career, I'm sure he's very proud of that.
Who was your debut again?
Internationally, it was... Portugal. I was in the squad for the England game at Lansdowne Road when it was postponed with the riot.
Is that the one that where it went off big time and they called it off?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and Jack had told me that I was going on at half time, so I already knew that. Yeah. So anybody I could get a ticket for who was either family, friends. We're in the bloody stand. Excuse me.
No, it's okay.
French.
No worries. It's podcast.
In the stand, knowing that I was coming on at half time because Jack had already told me, and then of course it all went a bit sour, sort of 20-25 minutes into the game, and I'm just sat there thinking, oh my God, no, please don't, and that was it. The
27 caps though.
Yeah, and I feel really fortunate to have got that. Time, you know, not fortunate is probably not the right word. I feel really proud to have got that because at the time, like I said, you had Dennis Irwin, Gary Kelly, Stephen Carr, Terry Phelan, Steve Staunton, Ian Hart. These were like the fullbacks that were vying to get in the team.
Top draw, like
so, yeah,
well.
Absolutely, yeah. So to get as many as I did with the quality that was around, I feel very, very proud of that.
Then, the sort of like that comes to an end, the big clubs, but you still want to play football, and you go to Kidderminster.
Yeah, Mark Yates was the gaffer.
Ex-Birmingham as well.
Yeah, ex-Birmingham, yeah. And he rang me out of blue. And I just left Derby, so I was just coming up to 36 years of age. And I still wanted to play, but I knew it wasn't going to be at quite the level that I would have liked. And Mark rang, he said, look, he said, no pressure. He said, I obviously know all about you, what you bring to the team. He said, I'm happy for you to come over and just train a couple of days a week and play, obviously, when we have games. So that suited me down to the ground, and I had two great years at Kidderminster. We went to Wembley and played in the FA Trophy. We got beat, unfortunately, by Stevenage 3-2. But again, we had a... I really enjoyed my time. I've enjoyed my time at every club I've been at for probably all the same reasons, where it's been a good group of lads, good group of players who've all wanted to do well for each other.
Mm. So then you decide, right, okay, I'm not playing. Management. How did that come about?
Yeah,
Galway.
Well, that was sort of a curveball there, really. Steve Staunton had got the Irish job, and I know Steve very well and get on very well with him. And he said to me, he said, "Look, I might have something for you." And I went, "Oh, okay. Well, what are you talking about?" And what happened was, they had a B international up in Scotland. So Pat Devlin was the manager of the B team, and he asked me to come along as the coach, just to obviously do a few bits with the lads, and because at that time I hadn't really thought about going into management or anything like that. So I thought, great. Well, I'm obviously not playing, so I'd love to do it. So man, and I really enjoyed it. We had 4 or 5 days together. And really got a little bit of a buzz for it. You know, it's I suppose it's as close to playing without actually playing that you can be. So I'm pretty sure we beat Scotland. You'd have to double check that, but I'm sure we beat Scotland. So I thought, again, like, you get a little bit of a taste for the first team. You think, do you know what? I quite like that, and I want to be about that. So off the back of that, there was another lad, Tony Cousins, who was on the coaching staff of that B game. And I know Tony very well from Ireland, and I was saying, well, what are you doing? And he said, oh, manager of Galway, and blah, 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 blah. So the next thing, he had left Galway. And I just thought, you know what, I'll have a chat with the wife and see what she thinks. And and a long story short, I ended up getting an interview, flew over to Dublin, met, there was 3 or 4 of the board were there, and had the interview, and Nick Leeson was the man who made the decision. He gave me a call before I actually got on the flight back to the UK and said, look, well, we want to give you the job, will you accept it? So I did, and I had a great sort of, it was about 6-7 months there, because Tony had left after, I don't know, half a dozen games or whatever, so I came in for the last, whatever it was, 20 odd games.
And then St Patrick's, and you have young Paul Pesce-Salido helping you.
Me and Pesh, I obviously knew Pesh from playing against him, but we sort of got together at Derby. So we used to commute together. We'd take turns driving. So I got to know Paul really well. Another great lad, yeah, really nice fella. I'd been to Galway. It was a pretty good season, it turned out. We avoided relegation on the last day of the season. We had to win down at UCD in Dublin, which we did 1-0, and that was massive. We reached 2 semi-finals of both the Cups in Ireland. So to go from being sort of classed as relegation fodder to getting to 2 semi-finals and staying up was pretty successful. I went to St. Pat's then after that because I thought they were in the Europa League. And I thought, well, that's another step up the coaching ladder in terms of preparation and how you deal with it and all that sort of stuff. And I had sort of mixed 6 months there, really. We started off terribly. Our first home game was against Galway United, as it would be, and we got smashed 3-0. They beat us. And I got untold stick from the Galway fans because I'd obviously left, and they're calling me Judas and all that sort of stuff. I can tell you, I certainly didn't leave for the money. Again, it was another sort of learning curve, you know. But we did really well.
You did well in the Europa League from memory.
Yeah, we got to the penultimate game to actually get into the group stage, and lost to Steaua Bucharest, and they were
massive club
handy outfit. Yeah, they were really good. We just if I'm being honest, they were just better than us. You know, they had better players, more quality. But we did, we beat a team from Malta in the first round. Then we beat Rubin Kazan.
Kazan, yeah.
Out in Russia. We drew in back in Dublin, and we went out there and beat them. And that was just... I actually think the fella got the sack after that. So for them, it was just such a shock that we would go out there and beat them.
Beat them, yeah.
You know, it was absolutely massive. But then Steaua Bucharest were just... They were just that much better than us, and that happened.
So what, tell us... Then you're not in the game now. I mean, why is that?
Well, I went after a couple of seasons in Ireland. I got an opportunity to go out to America, and I worked for a company called IMG in Bradenton in Florida, and they have this purpose-built facility which is just amazing. You talk about state of the art, and they have a golf, tennis, soccer, as they call it out there. I want to say lacrosse, American football and baseball academies all within this complex. Wow. So it's a huge, huge, big business. And the kids come and they live like they're at university. They live on campus. They go to school and then we fit in around school and whatever.
They're big on their college sports and stuff like that, aren't they?
Yeah, they absolutely love it. So I got a job there working at the under-16s in the soccer academy. And we had about, I want to say, sort of 150, 160 kids just in the soccer bit, you know. And it was $90,000 a year for parents to send their children.
That's a pay to send them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It wasn't they were going out and scouting these. It was proper business. Absolutely massive business. I remember we had a family from Venezuela, had four children at the academy. There was two in the soccer department, one tennis and one golf. And the joke among the staff was that they were giving them a discount because there was four of them, but he was still costing them $250,000 a year, not million, dollars a year to send his four kids to the academy. Jeez. So that the sort of the running joke was, well, is he in the oil business or is he in the other business?
Yeah, exactly.
And nobody ever knew, but he did turn up with a big entourage every time he arrived.
You come from a sporting family. You've mentioned, I think, your dad was a snooker player. Your brother was a heavyweight boxer.
Yeah, my brother Colin was a he was a decent boxer. I think he won the Southern Area title in the UK. So but he was at the age where he needed somebody to come in and sort of take him to the next level, you know. And unfortunately he didn't come across that person, and he moved over to he did kickboxing. He just likes that sort of physical contact type of thing. And my other brother, Warren, one of my other brothers, Warren, was on the books at Peterborough as a young lad, he had a 2-year apprenticeship there. And unfortunately, he broke and dislocated his ankle in his second season. And that sort of, that ended his days there, really, which was very unfortunate because he was a good player.
Best player you've played with?
There's so many for different reasons. Paul McGrath was just amazing. Roy Keane, obviously, what he brought to the team. Letizia for natural ability. Shearer as a goal scorer.
Spot for choice.
Yeah, I was a very Dougherty when he came to Blues. Oh. I mean,
he was
so talented. I can easily see why he played for Barcelona and AC Milan, all those big clubs. Because, again, just natural.
And World Cup winner with France.
Yeah. you won't thank me for leaving that out. But, I've been very, very fortunate to play with some really, really good players.
Best player you played against?
Against? Well, thinking of sort of wingers, Henri, when he started at Arsenal, played left wing. He wasn't bad. Giggs was obviously decent. Overmars.
Well, you had to get a bed early on a Friday night then, didn't you?
Oh my God, yeah. And the thing was then as well, back then, in those days, you could at least hit them once.
And get away with it.
But all of those three that I've named there, you could hit them and they just get back up and they'd sort of look at you and go, well, you can't hit me again.
Yeah.
And then it was just, I mean, Overmars was just, oh my God. And Henri, you only had to turn your head away and they're gone, you know. And where are they? And Giggs then was obviously dribbling and he had pace as well, you know. So he could go left side, right side. It was just, they're probably the best three.
Who's your daftest teammate?
Had to be Robbie Savage, without a doubt. He was just, he was like a little boy in sweet shop. Yeah, he was just, he was always trying to do stuff, you know, just to be funny. And in fairness to him, he was good at it, yeah. Every now and again, he'd pull something on and go, that is funny.
Yeah. Who was your favourite manager you played for?
I'd have to say Kenny at Blackburn, for obvious reasons, winning the Premier League and signing me. And Jack, I got most of my caps under Mick McCarthy, but Jack to say that you worked
with Jack,
with what he did in those 10 years in the Republic of Ireland, to be able to say, well, I got into the squad sort of the back end of his time, but he experienced working with him. It was just, yeah, I'd say those two.
I won't mention it to Steve that you never mentioned him, by the way.
Well, tell him I liked him as well.
I mean, it's been fascinating. Are you done with the game now, do you think?
I think I am, yeah. I've 51 now. I've been out of the game for, gosh,
I'm
10
gonna
years
say, can I
now.
Say, I'm gutted you. I wasn't mentioning your favourite managers.
Oh, well, yeah, we didn't discuss the ex-Blues, did we? So,
You enjoy it, don't you?
Yes, I do, yeah. It's because, again, you know, you don't see the lads a lot and you're in the dressing room and there's always somebody that'll go, oh, remember when this happened? And you go, oh, yeah, I've forgotten about that. And usually it's not in a good way, but, yeah, it is nice every now and again to get sat with the lads and obviously then go out on the pitch, and we're obviously nowhere near as fit as we are, as we were. So there's a little bit of Mickey taking with that as well.
I mean, just finally, you've had your fair share of illness, but you're looking in great shape now. I mean, are you fully fit now?
I'm reasonably fit. I try and be sensible with what I eat and drink. I do enjoy going to the gym. I don't run so much now. Sort of the joints are a little bit achy if you go too far or you go for too long. So sort of static bikes is where I'm at now with that. But I try to keep reasonably fit and healthy. And so I certainly haven't gone the way some players do where they just balloon up.
Listen, it's been absolutely fascinating talking to you, Jeff. It's been a fantastic career. Thanks for chatting to us on there.
No, cheers, Tom. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much indeed. Well, folks, Jeff Kenner, let us know what you think. Good, bad, or indifferent, we want your reviews. Until the next time, thanks for being with us.